If you watched the development of the Arab Spring uprisings in Egypt with all those young protesters going on to social media and making demands for Hosni Mubarak to step down, very secular kind of feeling there, just pushing for democracy and hoping to keep the country on a secular pace, you may be scratching your head now at the early results that are trickling in from the parliamentary election. That's because the party that's getting the most votes at this point is the Islamist group, the Muslim Brotherhood.
And part of that is that they are well organized.
They
always have been well organized. Even though they've been banned, they've existed throughout the last 4 decades.
Although the second party that's getting the most votes is an even more conservative religious group as well. So what's going on? In fact, the party created by the Muslim Brotherhood is expected to take around 40% of the vote in Cairo and Alexandria, at least. Joining us now is Youssef Sidom, chief editor of the Copt newspaper. Youssef, what are we to make of this rise of the Islamist parties?
Well, this was kind of expected because the Islamic Brotherhood group is a very old political party established in the early 20s of the last century, and they are most organized. They were not on the political arena because they were banned from practice under Mubarak's regime, but they have a very strong comeback after the January Revolution. So it's not a great surprise that they have been succeeding in the past elections, but still it remains to be seen what will be the final outcome of what they reap from the parliamentary seats, because what was announced yesterday is only one-third of the first phase of 3 phases. We still have to go to the second and third phases, and we still have to wait until the end of the race in order to find what are the results of the combined lists. What was announced yesterday is only the individual seats, the individual candidates.
Youssef Sidom, you're the chief editor of the Copt newspaper, the Coptic Christians there in Egypt. Does it make you, is there cause of a concern there for Copts? Should the Islamist parties take control of the government?
Well, the Copts, the Christians of Egypt, of course, are supporting the liberal coalition, and they are against the rise of the political Islamic coalition. They are doing their best with a good category of moderate Muslims in order to keep the Islamic wing at bay. Egypt has had quite a slim, embarrassing percentage of Egyptians going to the ballot boxes, which never exceeded 20% of the voters. Now we are seeing a very strong, encouraging comeback, ranging between 70 to 75% of the voters. So I hope that Christians and moderate Muslims form a good category of this comeback in order to keep the Islamic wing at bay as far as possible.
That's Youssef Sidom, chief editor of the Copt newspaper. Also on the line with us is Noelle King. She's a reporter in Cairo for The Takeaway. And Noelle, can you hear me?
Hi, good morning, Celeste. Good morning, John.
Let me ask you, we talked a lot about how long the Egyptian elections were, that the voting itself was going to take weeks, over a month. So how representative are these early results? Could it go a completely other way by the time this entire process is finished?
Well, Celeste, that's a really important question. You know, this round of voting has been compared to a merry-go-round. What we're looking at basically is 3 different rounds of voting. You have 9 Egyptian states that voted on Monday. You will have 9 Egyptian states 2 weeks from now, and then 2 weeks from 2 weeks after that, you will have the last 9 Egyptian states. The results that we're looking at now are actually something like the first third of the first third. Let me explain that a little bit. Egyptians were asked to vote for individual individual candidates. One third of the candidates they were choosing, they would vote for either Jane Doe or John Smith, right? And for the second two thirds of candidates, they were voting for a party, say the Freedom and Justice Party, the Muslim Brotherhood's party. Now, the issue is the party results are not going to be released for another couple of weeks now. What we're seeing today are the individual candidate results. So that's one third of the initial one third round of voting or polling. So in a sense, you could make the argument that this isn't terribly representative of voting as a whole. The reason that it's raised some eyebrows, or the reason that people are saying it's indicative, is because the voting that took place this week was in some of Egypt's more liberal neighborhoods and more liberal demographics. So if you see the Islamists doing very well in these liberal areas, it makes you think, or it makes you wonder, how well are they going to do in the more conservative areas where they are expected to do very well? And that's why this is garnering so much attention, even though it is very, very early in the process.
And are the Muslim Brotherhood in any way calling for Sharia law to be instituted in Egypt?
Well, you know, it's funny, Celeste. The Sharia law has been something of a nuclear issue, if you will. None of the candidates, none of the parties have really wanted to go as far as saying that they support Sharia law. And what they have said, what many of them have said, and the Freedom and Justice Party, the Muslim Brotherhood's party, are the ones you really want to watch right now. What they've said is they want a civil society that incorporates religious law, that incorporates aspects of religious law. Currently, the Egyptian constitution does say that Sharia law is Islamic law is the law of Egypt. The point is, though, and has always been, that's not really followed to a T. It's not really followed at all, as a matter of fact. Now, it does, however, make some of the younger people who called for a more democratic Egypt, and of course their older peers, it makes them very nervous when the specter of Sharia law is broached, because it means things like alcohol will be banned. And that's a small thing, but in a country that relies heavily on tourism, the banning of alcohol, the banning of women wearing bikinis on beaches, these are all really, really big things when it comes down to the tourist dollars. And so even if this wasn't just a philosophical or religious fight, some of this is purely pragmatic. You don't want to have very strict Islamic law in a country that relies on foreign tourists for much of its economy.
That's Noel King, a freelance reporter in Cairo working for The Takeaway. Thanks so much, Noel. And Yosef Sidom is chief editor of the Copt newspaper there in Cairo as well, talking about the early results from Egypt's parliamentary elections. And joining us now, Michael Wahid Hanna, Egyptian-born researcher, fellow at the Century Foundation. And Michael, also joining us from Cairo. So as you just heard, Noel was talking about the fact that what we're seeing are the election results for individual candidates. Can we look at these winners so far and get an idea of what the parliament will look like?
Well, I think based on what you just heard, there is going to be a very large Islamist presence in parliament, and one that is larger than we probably had initially expected. And it's the Salafis, the ones who are to the right of the Muslim Brotherhood, who are carrying a very big share of the vote and look to be the second largest parliament political party in parliament, larger than the liberal bloc. And so that has obviously rattled some nerves and has made people nervous about what looks to be an Islamist-dominated parliament coming up.
Well, I know it's rattled nerves in the United States. Is it rattling nerves there as well? Are people actually concerned that the country will be dominated by religious rule?
Well, certainly. I mean, among liberals, and they're obviously not a majority in this country, but there are constituencies that are rattled. There are liberal groups, some women's groups, Christians. I mean, I think it's important that we contextualize this. This is one election. There are going to be other elections. There is a freer political process now. And if there are mistakes made now, there is a hope that liberal groups can take advantage in the future.
We want to be careful, though, Michael. I mean, in a sense, the first time Egyptians get to vote, it would make sense that one of the things they're most proud of, their Muslim heritage, is one of the pieces of the political expression in addition to the liberal values that you're talking about, right?
Well, certainly. I mean, I think there's a lot of organizational advantages. The Muslim Brotherhood has been, for many years now, the most coherent opposition force in Egypt. They've been in existence for over 80 years. They have been involved in electioneering and elections in the past, even though those elections were rigged. They've got experience of political organization. They have grassroots services, and they're very broad-based. So they came to this with a lot of organizational advantages. I think what is surprising interesting is the size of the victory and the fact that the Salafis, these more hardline Islamist groups, are carrying such a large share of the vote.
And yet, at the same time, the parliament doesn't wield any real power, right? It's still this unelected military council that runs the country.
That's true, but it sets up a separate sphere of influence. They are supposed to be in charge, essentially, of picking a constituent assembly to write a constitution. And this parliament could be with us for 5 years. I mean, there's nothing that says that this parliament's going to be dissolved. So this set of forces that we see now might be the parliamentary force that goes that sticks in Egypt for some years to come.
But we'll still be getting election results for weeks ahead as they take votes in places other than Cairo and Alexandria. Michael Wahid Hanna, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Egyptian-born researcher, fellow at the Century Foundation, talking about the early results from Egypt's parliamentary elections.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.